Hello, and welcome to Rad Mom Radio, a podcast dedicated to moms and all their favorite topics. My name's Natalie, and I'm your host. Hello, and welcome back to Rad Mom Radio. Thank you so much for joining me this week for another episode. I have a really good one to share with you this week. So there's something that I'm really bad about acknowledging, like, milestones, my own, like, personal milestones, and I really need to share this one. I'm well past a year of podcasting, so this is episode 60, I believe. I did do more in April for autism acceptance than I normally do, but a year of podcasting came and went without me acknowledging that, and so I need to do that for myself. Just kind of like a pat on the back to myself for launching and maintaining a podcast for a whole year. I'm really excited about that. It's been so much fun. I've really loved it, and I'm really proud of myself for sticking with it, for taking the leap to start it in the first place, because it is a lot of work. It is kind of overwhelming to do a podcast by yourself. And so I needed to, you know, just acknowledge that just for myself, you know? So that's been really cool. I'm really excited to share that. And just a huge thank you to all the moms who have been on my podcast. I went through and counted, and I think I've interviewed like 60 people. That's a lot. Like, that's a lot of people to interview. And it's been so much fun. It's been really cool. So big thank you to all the moms who've been on my show, my podcast. I've really appreciated it. It's been super rewarding and just honestly one of the coolest things that I've ever done. So that's that. We have 3 more weeks left of school until summer break, and I cannot wait. I'm so excited for the year to be over. And I feel like this every year, but I think especially this year because Riley's been in general education. I have to say to like all the parents of kids in general education, I had no idea how much nagging you guys deal with on a daily, weekly basis. Like, I have never been nagged so much by my child as I have been in this last 3-ish months that he's been like mostly mainstreamed. I feel like every week it's something new. It's spirit week. It's jogathon money. It's yearbook money. I feel like every day my child comes to my car and says, "Where's my jogathon money? Where's my yearbook money? Where's my this money? Hey, I need to wear tie-dye tomorrow." And I had no idea. I really didn't. I've been focused on, you know, getting phone calls about behavior or meltdowns or IEPs or this, that, and the other. And I had been missing out on the school nagging, like the school sanctioned nagging that parents are subjected to constantly. So I cannot wait to be done with that. I actually dropped the ball and waited too long to order Riley a yearbook, so now I have to tell him he's not going to be able to get a yearbook. It's just a whole thing, and he never would have known about the yearbook if he wasn't in general education. So big shout out to you guys, you parents of neurotypical gen ed kids. I had no idea you guys were being nagged so mercilessly. It's like having a loan shark coming out to your car every day. Where's my money? Give me my money. Where's my jogathon money? I need to get the prizes. It's ridiculous. So for that reason alone, I cannot wait for the school year to be over. So I'm really excited about that. I have a really great episode to share with you guys this week. I got to interview Scotty Weintraub. She is the founder of Reframe Parenting. And Scotty is out in Portland, Oregon, and she has 2 teenage sons that are neurodivergent. And just over the years of having to navigate advocating for her sons in the school district, Scotty has become really passionate about helping other parents learn how to advocate for their kids in the school system. So we got to talk all about that. In her work in advocacy, Scotty really focuses on reframing how we think about our kids with disabilities or different diagnoses, like how we reframe sitting down at the IEP table, our approach, like what are we asking for, how are we advocating, and all of those little reframes can really help with mindset when it comes to advocating for your child in the school system. So it's a really great conversation. If you have a kid with an IEP or a 504, you'll definitely get a lot out of this episode. You can find out more about Scotty on her website. It's reframeparenting.com. She has a free school struggle checklist on there. She has some blog posts about, you know, like a roadmap to school success and all kinds of stuff. So definitely check out her blog. But yeah, this was a great episode. Thank you so much, Scotty, for your time and all of your wisdom and information. And this is my interview with Scotty. Hi, Scotty. Welcome to Rad Mom Radio.
Hi, Natalie. It's so nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining me today. Today, we're going to talk about advocating for your children in the school system. But before we do that, I kind of just wanted to get some background info on you and then put you on the spot with a couple of icebreaker questions. Yeah. It's kind of funny. Are you an introvert or an extrovert by chance?
Mostly an extrovert.
Oh, okay. So I'm an introvert, and I started following this account on Instagram for introverts. And one of the things the guy keeps talking about is how introverts hate icebreaker questions. And I was like, I don't hate them. But what I realized is that I like asking them. I don't know if I feel the same way about answering them. But I used to just ask them without giving them to people ahead of time. But now I'm giving them ahead of time. So hopefully that makes it a little bit easier.
Okay.
So you're out in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about living in Portland?
Well, I will say the summers here are really lovely. And they almost make up for the winters, which are dreary and dark and rainy. So this is my, you know, coming to my favorite time of year, where people just get outside and there's so much to do and everything's so green. So that's one of the things I love. We also just have amazing food here, and I'm a foodie at heart. So I love being able to try all sorts of new great food.
Yeah. Then my other icebreaker question for you is, what is your favorite meme?
Oh, I love memes. The ones this last week, I've been really loving the ones from Prince Louis at the coronation. He is always prime for memeing, and it's been super fun. As anyone who has ever had a small child knows, you just cannot control their behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how it doesn't matter like where the child comes from. Like,
nope.
They're royalty, whatever, like kids are kids in all settings. Yeah. So could you tell us a little bit about like what you do as far as like your work and your work with parents?
Sure. So I'm the founder of Reframe Parenting, and I started Reframe Parenting after many years of advocating for my own kids in school. And I found it to be such a sometimes difficult experience. And then I started kind of naturally helping my friends and other people that I knew in that same kind of process with what to do when your child is having a hard time in the school, who to talk to, what questions to ask. And I found myself just naturally doing this. And then I realized like there's a need for this. People don't really know, especially in that time when you know maybe something's not going well. Maybe you know what it is, maybe you don't. But until you know what the resources are or who to talk to or how to find information, that you're really in this difficult, challenging, early, messy part that I feel like is underserved. And that's what I'm hoping to do, to empower parents to get the information they need and get their own confidence around advocating for their child, because I really believe that's the best way to move forward.
When did you start Reframe Parenting?
About 6 months ago.
Okay.
It's a pretty new project, but I'm really loving connecting with people about how they can best support their kids. And I found that sometimes people who are naturally, you know, we were speaking about introverts and extroverts, and some people feel very naturally able to do that kind of question asking. But some people are a little more hesitant, and that's totally fine. But I think they just need a little more assistance and some coaching mm-hmm. to get to the place where they understand what role they really do have in advocating for their kids at school, because there's a big role mm-hmm. for a parent there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I feel like my son was diagnosed with autism. It'll be 5 years in September. So we've been doing this like with the IEPs in the school system mm-hmm. for that length of time. And I feel like one of the things I've never heard anybody talk about is the struggle that you just mentioned. And I don't really know how to like encapsulate it. The struggle that an individual parent might have to assert themselves as an advocate for their child. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
And for me personally, it took some introspection and time thinking about how sometimes you've got to really just ask the questions. And I had to get over my own kind of people pleaser tendencies. Mm-hmm. And so that took a lot of work. So I have a lot of empathy for, you know, other parents who are in this situation. And I think also because we know that teachers they're good at their jobs and they're the experts on school. And as parents, we're not. And so we're left feeling as if we don't really know how we can get involved when it's kind of out of our realm of influence. It's not in our home. It's somewhere else. There are other professionals involved. And so it gets a little harder to see your path there.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that you, I guess, not that you've had to identify with that, but just like you said, like the people pleaser aspect of it, like I am also a people pleaser and I'm working on it. And, you know, people pleasers come to everything as wanting to coexist and fit into something that already exists. Mm-hmm. Like, how can I add myself onto this and not disrupt it, basically?
Yes.
And IEPs and the school system become hard, I feel like, because first of all, it's different for every parent from what I've observed. So I run a support group for moms of neurodivergent kids in my city. And so over the last 5 years, I've just observed some moms have an extreme, like a headbutting, you know, they have a huge hurdle to get over. It takes years of fighting. You know, I know a mom who's had like 3 or 4 IEP meetings in the last couple months. Some moms have that. And then some moms, more like myself, I've really never encountered any huge hurdles with my son in the school system.
You're right that it varies so wildly. Mm-hmm. And some of that's just school by school or district by district. And how they run their programs. Some of it is, you know, the particular staff that you might be up against. I have also encountered sort of both of the scenarios you mentioned, both the pretty easy to get supports and manage way, and the also very challenging and needing a lot of time and energy way. And mm-hmm. I hope that with what I'm doing, I'm helping more people have the easier way. Not that I can control all the variables, but just to give them information and a lens to look at what's happening through that will help them as they navigate those systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I imagine that when it's really bad, it can feel very isolating. So yes. I can imagine it would be very helpful to have someone who can come alongside you and help you navigate that.
Yes. And I think especially for families who aren't yet part of an IEP process or who don't even really know what's happening with their child. They just know that something's not going well. Maybe they're getting feedback. This is what happened to me. How I started advocating was that I was getting a lot of feedback from teachers saying, these problems are coming up in the class. And, you know, it was sort of with, okay, here you go. There's this problem, fix it. And I thought, oh, I don't know how to fix this. Mm-hmm. And so when I didn't find that path forward, I sort of, as a natural, I'm kind of a researcher by nature. I sort of dug in and said, okay, now what do I need to know? How can mm-hmm. I get that information? And so that's, you know, sort of the beginning of my journey was really when my oldest, who's now in high school, was in early elementary school, when I started getting those emails and being asked to solve behavioral problems that I had no idea what to do with.
That's kind of interesting that they would just kind of hand it to you. Like, can you figure this out at home?
Well, I don't know if they were asking me quite to figure it out at home, but to, I don't know, talk with my child, mm-hmm. somehow make change. And that just wasn't what was going to be happening. So, or rather that it wasn't going to actually fix anything. I can talk, mm-hmm. You can talk to your kid a bazillion times about something, but it doesn't necessarily make a difference in mm-hmm. when they're in a classroom setting where there are variables, you know, that as a parent, you have no control over. And what we discovered through that process was that his needs were just not getting met. Mm-hmm. And so then it became a process of trying to work with the teacher to help them understand that the needs weren't being met and then start meeting them. And mm-hmm. that proved difficult at the time too, because I think sometimes teachers feel very strongly that they know what they're doing, which many, many times they do. But, you know, sometimes there are students who come with different needs and you might not know exactly what to do. And that's where I started having to really get involved with helping teachers understand what was happening with my child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever found that it's hard in the school system to get teachers to accommodate students that need accommodations? Like, I guess for an example, something I've been running into with my son. So he's in gen ed right now with inclusion time. And I just found out like a couple weeks ago that kids can get their recess taken away. I didn't know that that was still a thing. So I found out that if they call it sitting on the wall. So like, I guess he had been, I don't even know what he did. He was probably talking out of turn, which has been a consistent issue since he switched to this school. But then he has to like sit on the wall. And for me, in my mind, I'm not a teacher, but just logically, that just doesn't make sense to me to put an active child who needs to get their body moving, like, okay, then when it's opportunity to get the body moving, make them sit. Like, this just doesn't make sense to me. Have you found that sometimes it's hard to get schools or teachers to make special accommodations for kids that need them like that?
Well, on the recess piece, this is, I dislike that strategy because mm-hmm. you're right that kids who need to move, and a lot of neurodiverse kids in particular, have a real need for sensory input in their bodies in that way and will benefit in the classroom by having had that time to move. So mm-hmm. I think it's not a great strategy. And I have encountered that one too, like with my own kids. And thankfully, our district actually has a broad policy that says that recess can't be taken away. But that being said, I still have had to point that out multiple times. And so, yeah, I think that there's that one sometimes comes up. I think there are better strategies, but that's again where the advocacy can work and talking with the teacher about, you know, this isn't meeting his needs in a way that will actually help you in the classroom. Because if he is able to move his body, he's going to be better able to concentrate later. And there's, you know, there's science behind that. Mm-hmm. And I've even in the past written that into our IEP or a 504 that says recess can't be taken away because it's so fundamental to their success at school.
Mm-hmm. So see, I think here's where like the people pleasing piece comes in, because in my brain, I've thought about that. Like, I thought about next time we have the IEP, on what I want it written in, that he can't get his recess taken away. But then there's another part of me, that people pleasing part, that says, but why should he not have to have that punishment or consequence if other kids do? You know what I mean? And I love I will always advocate for my son. Like, I'm not a pushover when it comes to him, but still there's that part that's like, is it really fair to ask for something special? You know what I mean?
Well, I'm going to ask you to reframe that thought a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So are you really asking for something special?
No, not in the grand scheme of things. No.
And I think the basis of meeting kids where they are means that we have to help them succeed in the ways that they are able to succeed. And so, you know, especially for neurodivergent kids, school can feel like being, you know, a square peg in a round hole, or vice versa. I forget how that analogy goes, that they don't really fit there. So if we don't do those accommodating things, which is what an IEP is all about, you know, these are the things that this particular child needs in order to be successful in school. If we don't do those things, then what's the alternative? The alternative is not succeeding. Mm-hmm. And that's not what anybody wants for their child. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right that sometimes we have to get over our own little mental roadblocks about some of that and really find a place where we feel confident about, I'm not asking for something special. I am setting my child up to succeed.
Okay. I like that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah. I can see why you call your business reframing. That's good. I like that. So I am like someone who tends to kind of always focus on like the, I don't know, like the emotional pieces of things, like how things affect people, because I don't think that, you know, when you're talking about your kids and you're talking about advocating, you know, it's all well and good to say, do this, this, and this, but there's other stuff that happens. And I think it is important to take care of the parent, acknowledge the parent's feelings, acknowledge your own feelings about what it feels like to advocate for your child. So what are some common emotions that parents experience when they have to advocate for their children in IEP meetings?
Well, I think confusion is a big one. You know, when you have a child who's now gotten to the point where they're entering an IEP conversation, even it's a whole different system. So you may have already figured out like the regular school day-to-day stuff, but now you're being asked to attend meetings and sign forms in this whole legal process that is very, very new. So I think confusion is certainly at the top of the list for a lot of people. And you don't even know what the process involves, like what happens after this meeting, what is an IEP document, all of those things. And then there's just confusion about, well, what is my role in this meeting? And really in an IEP in particular, parents have an equal role to all of the other people who are in that IEP team. So there isn't a hierarchy of power in those situations, although it can sometimes feel like that when you go into a school meeting and you have, you know, a group of school professionals sitting there in front of you and you are a parent who doesn't really understand this process you're entering into. And sometimes it can be frustration too. I mean, you mentioned that sometimes I think barriers are put up in places they don't need to be. Students are not being given the accommodations maybe they need, and they're, so I see frustration from parents too, but as you mentioned, sometimes it goes really smoothly and the child gets what they need. And in that case, I think it's relief, you know, like, oh, whew, okay, that wasn't so bad. I can do this. And then, you know, that breeds confidence in the process, confidence that your child is getting their needs met. And so I think it can be a huge range.
I have kind of a side question that I've always kind of wondered about, like, as I've sat in IEP meetings. So it's like, you know, there's always a ton of people in there. And typically they're not people I've brought. I don't typically bring anybody with me. But You know how, like, sometimes it's like someone can only be there for a little chunk of the meeting, mm-hmm. so you have to give permission for them to leave? Do you think that that's something that is okay, or do you think that parents should be insisting? Is there a reason to insist that that person stay?
I'm not sure. I think if that person was really instrumental, then it might, if it were tricky for you to continue to have the meeting without them, then I would see that as a problem. Where I've seen situations like that are, for instance, general ed teachers who there's requirements in those meetings that they have them there, but sometimes they have other meetings, or they can give their input and then leave, and then it isn't as fundamental to what you need to accomplish.
Okay. That makes sense. I've always, you know, because I am accommodating, I've always been like, yeah, that's fine. And then I've always wondered, should I not be, you know, doing that? So I've just always wondered about that.
Yeah, I think it would depend on the person and what role they were playing. If they were really critical to what needed to be discussed, then that might be more problematic.
Yeah, that makes sense. So in, you know, especially like these more contentious IEP situations where, you know, it's almost like an ongoing battle, what are some ways that parents can care for themselves during some of these more stressful IEPs?
Well, I think one of them is to just know that your child's struggles are not a result of your parenting. Like, the reason that you were there is not because you are a bad parent or because there's something wrong with your child. They're there because they have unique needs, and you are uniquely positioned as their parent to help meet those needs. So yeah, if you can think about it in those ways, it kind of takes some of the pressure off. And I think when you're confronted with in those situations, whether it's an IEP meeting or even just a regular, like, meeting after school with the teacher because they want to discuss things, it can feel a little like a pile on. Mm-hmm. And then they did that, and then this happened, and then that happened. And so the negativity of that, even if it's not always meant as negative, can feel like a lot. I think that just recognizing that you're still a good parent, and by showing up, being there, listening, and advocating, that is good parenting. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I think just taking a break if you need to. Like, it's okay to, if things get a little overwhelming, to wait a little while before the next meeting, or say, you know, I'm just not sure what to do. Can we come back to this next week, or whatever the timeline might look like? But taking a break is always a good idea if you're feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah. Would you say it's like more common than not for parents to like either like request a continuation on an IEP meeting or to like take the IEP home without signing it? Is that pretty common?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I do know that as a parent, you know, you can request an IEP meeting at any time. Mm-hmm. And there are, and I'm not an expert in the legal side of these things, but, you know, there are timelines they have to meet. But if you need time to think about it, to discuss with your partner or with other people about what is happening in those meetings, I think that it's always okay to ask for that.
Yeah. So since you do like a lot of work with reframing, mm-hmm. What are some specific ways that we can reframe the way we view our child and their struggles in school?
Okay. These are some of my favorite ones. One is just to remember that we are not our kids. And I think for some parents, this one can be difficult. We remember what it's like to be a kid. And if we get stuck in how we would have handled the situation or an academic challenge as a student ourselves, that means we miss the opportunity to see what's happening with our child and their own unique needs and strengths and challenges. So if, for instance, you know, I was a pretty diligent student myself, and if you think, well, I could turn in my homework on time, why can't my child turn in their homework? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Then if we focus too much on our own experience and not seeing them for what what their strengths are and where their challenges lie, we're missing seeing them as individual people. And it can be tricky to move past. You get kind of stuck in that place. Well, I don't understand why stuff gets lost in their backpack. That's ridiculous. Because I was always organized. So if we can think about ourselves as not them, then that helps with the reframing piece. We talked a little bit earlier about my other one, which is around not being a reflection of our parenting, which I think is one that I wish I could like put on a giant billboard somewhere, because that one is one that brings up so many emotions for people. I think when our kids are struggling, it's easy to feel different than, you know, our friends who are also parents, our kids' friends' families. You know, there's just, it's natural to compare ourselves. And so when our kids are struggling, it's hard to not feel some shame or some unease about that. Another one is that I think curiosity is our friend. So if we approach the struggles, whatever they may be, with a sense of curiosity, then we can move from blame to discovery. So this is an opportunity here. If we can say, well, what's really happening, instead of leaping first to criticism or even punishment, instead to take a step back and I like the phrase, I wonder what's happening that is making this behavior appear. I wonder what's happening when my child can't turn in their homework. Mm-hmm. You know, there's opportunity to think about things in a different way. And I really like doing that because it gets you out of your head a little bit, right? Like instead of just the cycle of, oh, challenge, 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 it allows us to say, okay, well, how can we actually address this in a way that's meaningful? And I think that we've been talking around this last one too, a little bit about the more that we learn and grow ourselves about our role as a parent, the more we're able to meet their challenges with compassion and understanding instead of being frustrated. Mm-hmm. And if that's just sort of like letting ourselves off the hook a bit, you know, because this parenting gig is hard and it can be, and for some, it's even harder than for others. And if we like really focus on ourselves and figuring out what's going on with our own child with compassion and understanding, that just frees us up. Because I think what every parent wants is to enjoy their child.
Yeah.
Right? Is to have time for fun and play and enjoyment and not spend all of your time and energy on punishing or criticizing or trying to getting stuck in that difficult place.
Yeah.
So those are my favorites.
Yeah. I listened to you on a podcast yesterday and I can't remember what it was called. It was like the IEP something.
The IEP lab, the parent IEP lab.
Parent IEP lab. And there was something that you said that I thought was really cool, is kind of like reframing behaviors that you see in your child. Like, I think you said something about like, if your child is a daydreamer or like someone that doesn't focus, it could be that they're a very creative person.
Right.
Or if they are like a procrastinator, well, maybe they're just very deadline focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that because I feel like one of the strengths of reframing is taking something that feels negative, or like taking something that feels like a failure and turning it into something that's, at the very least, just more human and more compassionate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we're so hard on ourselves.
Oh my goodness. And we are hard on our kids too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the more we can be compassionate with them, the more we can be compassionate about ourselves. And I was listening to one of your latest episodes, which was about ADHD in adults. And this just brings it up for me about the more we can figure out what's going on with our child, the more compassionate we can be with our own challenges around, well, maybe how does my own brain work? Well, we were never taught as kids to think about that, right? No. And so the more we know about ourselves, the more we can say, oh, well, my brain works in these very particular ways. And mm-hmm. I might have these particular challenges, but I also have these strengths. Mm-hmm. And for adults with ADHD, just for instance, sometimes that brings great bursts of creativity, mm-hmm. As an example. So how can we lean into that is like a really great thing. Mm-hmm. How can we lean into the good parts, mm-hmm. and not just focus on the challenges? And the some of the problem with our school system is that it's really built for kind of the middle ground of learners, you know, that, and when you don't fit into that space, then you feel unsuccessful. When really, I believe all kids are smart, all people are smart, you know, they just haven't found the way to express it maybe in that environment. And so that compassion and learning more about ourselves allows us to free up maybe some mental load of our own too. And have more compassion with our kids.
Yeah. Definitely. It's something that I've been thinking about lately is just self-acceptance and how important that is in life in general, like learning how to accept yourself for who you are. And when it relates to being like neurodivergent, you know, it's very frustrating, you know, to be, mm-hmm. to look at yourself and to see what you're doing and then to with all your might wish you could be like people who do things differently, but you just can't. Mm-hmm. And so that reframing is, I feel like, fits in a lot with that self-acceptance. Like, yeah, it's very hard for me to do these things, but over here, like I really kick a lot of butt. Like I can really do some cool things over here.
Right. And because I think ultimately our goal as parents is to raise healthy and happy adults. And if we can help them be more comfortable in their own skin, knowing how their own brains work and being able to embrace those strengths and not just focus on their own challenges, I think that does them a huge service.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. So why do you think that reframing our thinking helps us as advocates for our children in the school system?
Well, we were just touching on this bit about if we can see our strengths, the strengths of our children, rather, then we can lead with, my kid is really awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think sometimes these school meetings focus a lot on the negative because that's often why you're called there. And although with IEPs in particular, there is supposed to be some conversation around strengths. But mm-hmm. I think the more that you as a parent can lead with your child's strengths, the better it sets the tone for the conversation around your child. So they're not just a problem. I don't think any kids are problems. I think sometimes they're having a difficult time, but that doesn't make them a problem. So if we can lead with, you know, my child might be having a hard time sitting still in class, but they are funny and a good friend and, you know, really interested in math and whatever, you know, whatever that list might be, then we're just kind of, we're helping reframe the whole conversation around our kid to be one of, he or she is a unique, multifaceted human being and not just the sum of whatever the challenge is that you're there to address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you like seen this a lot where there's just generally a lot of tension between parents and other members of the IEP team?
It definitely can happen. Certainly not all the time, but it can happen. Sometimes I think that comes out of frustration or maybe a lack of knowing what to do. And I think that that's okay. I think it's okay for teachers, special ed folks to say, I am we're all here to figure this out together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when they feel very much like they have to be the expert in the room, then sometimes that can lead to frustration because, you know, it's like you're hitting a wall.
Yeah. Yeah. So when that does come up, like when a parent does encounter tension or like negativity in an IEP meeting, what's the best way to deal with that?
Well, I think trying to keep your cool is always, you know, is always a good strategy, even though sometimes it can be hard. And, you know, it's hard not to feel really emotional in those because they're talking about your baby. You know, mm-hmm. this is like in a, they're in a professional setting and you're in a very personal setting.
Yes.
You're talking about your child, mm-hmm. who you love and who you want to succeed. And so when you don't know what to do, that lends itself to a lot of, you know, feeling of overwhelm. So trying not to get angry in the moment or combative, I think always helps. Cause I don't think any teamwork can happen when people are being angry. That's not to say I don't think that parents can show emotion, cause I think that they certainly can, but if the goal of the meeting is to help find a solution, we need to be very teamwork oriented in the way that we do that. How can we work together? I think offering to be a partner. I want to help. I just don't know how. Can you, what can I do to help? Mm-hmm. And approach it that way can sometimes like break the ice, but, and then they see, okay, this parent isn't here to get angry. They're here to work with us. Okay. We can do something with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that's been my lifelong strategy with people. Like as soon as I see someone, if you ever like talk to someone and they're just salty for whatever reason, just fresh from the morning, they woke up just on the worst foot. I've always found that like, it's a little different when it's with your kid, but I've always found like you can kind of disarm people by just being like, very, like you said, like, how can I help? Like, how can I make this easier? How can I be a part of the team? Yeah. I've always found that that works really well with people.
Yeah. And that I think is a great approach. And especially in schools where, you know, that teachers are overwhelmed mm-hmm. and they have a lot on their plates. So the more you can offer to be a partner in helping them, the better, I think, because it just shows them that you're really there to collaborate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a little kindness can go a long way. Mm-hmm.
What's your personal opinion? This wasn't on my list of questions, but your personal opinion about like parents crying in IEP meetings?
I do it. I'm a crier.
Yeah.
And it's an emotional thing. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to stigmatize crying in IEP meetings. I don't know how productive it is. So I think, you know, the more you can sort of like get the emotion out and process it and say like, this is just overwhelming for me right now. Mm-hmm. And acknowledging that that's just human, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really lend itself to like working through whatever you need to work through. So processing your emotion and then moving on, I think is a fine strategy.
Yeah. I remember like my very first IEP meeting with Riley, like I was not prepared for any of the emotional aspect of it. And like you said, it was very negative. It's very much like words like severe, poor, like all these just very negative words. And I just wasn't prepared for it. And because I am a people pleaser, I will just sit there and I'll just let it like build and build. But it got to the point where I couldn't hold it. And I said, I have to stop for a second. And I was like, I had snot bubbles like coming out of my nose. Like that's how upset I was. And you said something really profound a couple minutes ago. You said like for the other members of the IEP meeting, it's professional. For you, it's very personal. And I've in the years, you know, that we've been doing this, I've heard people say like, don't ever cry at an IEP meeting. And And that's all well and good if you can personally avoid crying. But I like you said, I feel like if you just let it out a little bit and kind of like, it's like when a soda bottle builds up with all that, you know, the bubbles. It's like you just need to like let it out a little bit so it doesn't explode.
Yeah.
And then tighten it back and then you can move on. But I was just curious what your opinion was, because I've heard such different opinions. Like, don't ever cry. Don't let them see you cry. But like, I literally can't. Even if it's good, even if it's positive, I will cry.
It's very difficult for me too. So I'm the last person to tell you not to, because it just doesn't work for me. But I think that, you know, we're also just showing that we're humans in a very human experience of talking about our children.
Yeah.
And that when your children are struggling, and that's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for normalizing emotions and not trying to stuff them down.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So you have kind of mentioned like, and I guess I just get this picture in my mind because I can relate to this, of like a parent feeling like their child is struggling in school, but not necessarily having concrete evidence for that or confirmation from their child that they're struggling. So what advice would you give to a parent who suspects that their child is struggling in school?
Well, my first advice is to trust your gut. If you feel like something's not right, it's probably pretty likely that something's not right. Yeah. You know your child best. And I think your intuition as a parent is your greatest strength. So if you just suspect that something's not going the way it should, that's your chance to ask questions.
Mm-hmm. And would you like say just first talking to the teacher about that, like just approaching it?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's that they've already gotten feedback from the teacher that it's already incoming. Sometimes it's that they're suspecting that something's happening with their child or that their child doesn't understand something that they should be able to figure out. And then it's about asking questions of the teacher. Well, I've noticed this. Observations, I think, are a great way to talk about it. I've noticed X, Y, or Z. I've noticed that they have a hard time with multiplication, as an example. Is that something you're seeing in the classroom? Is that showing up on his tests? Offering insight and asking questions, I think, goes back to our idea about collaboration. Isn't finger pointing. It isn't accusatory. It's inviting a partnership.
So where can people find out more about like what you're doing? Like what's your website and your social media contacts?
Well, they can find me online at reframeparenting.com. And on Instagram, I'm just Reframe Parenting. So that one's easy to remember too. And on my website, I have a couple of free downloads. One is a school struggle checklist. So when you just asked, how does someone sort of figure out if their kid is struggling at school? That's a great tool for you. If you're a little unsure, and one of the things in there is to listen to your gut. So have a look at that, the school struggle checklist. I've also got another one that I just put up a little while ago called the Summer Parent Discovery Guide, which is about this idea of reframing the way we look at our kid and gathering information over the summer so that we can help them get back to school on a strong start.
Oh, I like that. Cool. Well, thank you for coming on and chatting with me. I really enjoyed our conversation and all the information that you had.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun, and I look forward to hearing the episode when it comes out.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Rad Mom Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can always send me an email. My email address is radmomradio@gmail.com. And you can also find me on Instagram @RadMomRadio. Have a great week, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.